This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for coming. It's good to see all of you here. Did you get a handout? There's handouts. Okay. If you didn't get a handout, you can just raise your hand and Matthias can make sure you get. So, glad you're here. And the title, Reentry, Caring for Returning Missionaries. And I have a little bit of a little dilemma when in the session. I have so much I want to share, but I also enjoy interaction as well. And so I'm not necessarily going to be asking questions of you as we go along, but if you do have response or a question, you can stop me in the middle and raise your hand and say, hey, could we talk about that? I would invite that. There's so much to talk about. I'm sure I'm not going to get it all covered. But hopefully we'll give you some input that can be helpful for you. Now, before I get started, I'm going to get a raise of hands here. This is going to get confusing. But it'd be helpful to know who my audience is. So how many of you are here because you're a pastor or a church leader or maybe a pastor's wife? Maybe you're on the mission board or something and you're responsible for missionaries in your church. How many of you are in that category? Okay, quite a number. Very good. And how many of you have friends that are on the mission field or have returned and you're here because you care about them? Okay, wonderful. And then how many of you are return missionaries or you've come back home? Wow, okay, so there must be some overlap here because I see a lot. Good, okay, so that's helpful. So I have a little bit of everyone, every category here, and probably some ones that I didn't ask about. I'll be focusing in this session primarily on caring for missionaries who are coming back for an extended, sort of indefinite period of time, re-entry, right? But this will also be relevant for people who are home on what we call home assignment or furlough. So a lot of the same things apply. So let me just begin with a quote from Romans 10:13, for whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. How then shall they call on him in whom they have not believed, and how shall they believe in him of whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach unless they are sent? And I've been blessed to see, an increasing vision for sending workers to the unreached. And I think increasing vision for preparing our workers, training them to go. One of the areas of sending, though, that maybe I feel like has been overlooked, and that is caring for our missionaries when they come back. And as mission organizations, we're so excited about sending people, and someone comes back, and we're thankful for their work, but we have to send someone else to take their place, and we're very focused on that. And I think that this reentry part often gets overlooked. And one of the reasons I think we overlook it is because we don't understand it. After all, what's the big deal, right? You're just coming home. And a lot of people tend to look at it that way, so it's something that, unfortunately, is overlooked. As Matthias mentioned, we're talking about a transition. So before we talk about this transition, I want to just back up a little bit and talk about a transition that happened for the missionary before that, and that was going to the field. I'm just going to go through this quickly, but just to kind of get us thinking about it. So this is transition from home to the field. There's normal life, and then there's that personal call, and maybe the call is confirmed by the church and the mission organization, and there's that anticipation of departure, and then there's a departure, and then it's arrival on the field. And there's different ways to talk about this, but one is the fun stage, right? It's the honeymoon, and there is that honeymoon stage, the excitement and the fun, but inevitably, the missionary will come down off of that, and we could call the next stage the flight stage. That's when culture shock hits, and you wake up and you think about seriously about getting on a plane and going back home, the flight stage. And then there's the fight stage, and that is where you say, well, I'm not going home. I'm going to stick it out. But a lot of things frustrate you. Culture used to be, the people used to be fascinating. Now it's frustrating. And there's team conflict that you're trying to work through, and things are hard, and you get depressed and discouraged and maybe angry. We call that the fight stage. And that little arrow there just represents the fact that sometimes people aren't able to process this stage in a healthy way and end up not really recovering from that. But by God's grace and with the help of good people around you to pray for you and encourage you, you're going to come out of that and find what we call the fit stage, where you're not just surviving anymore, but you find a place of meaningful ministry, fulfilling meaningful ministry. So that's maybe what the stages of transition could look like, going to the field, the fun stage, the flight, the fight, and then finding that fit. Now, that's on the field. Does anyone want to guess what the graph looked like coming back, or someone who's come back? What do you think it looks like?
Same.
And except if I would draw it, I would draw it more like that. Would you say that's accurate? The fun stage, the honeymoon stage, is not quite as high, and the low, the fight stage, is even lower for a lot of people. Does that surprise you? You're aware of that? Yeah. Those of you who are returned missionaries, would you agree with that? That coming back, the transition, reverse culture shock is even harder? Yeah. Yeah. So do we understand why that is? You know, there's a lot of different factors, and we don't have time to dig into all this, but I think one of it is just unrealistic expectations. One missionary couple that I was debriefing with, and the wife said, you know what? She said, one of the things that makes coming home so hard is that everybody thinks it should be easy. And that just makes it really difficult. It's those expectations. People say, you're just coming home. It should be easy. Connecting with people back home turns out to be a lot harder than expected. Even though coming back, you kind of anticipate it, it's a lot harder than you expected. And connecting with people when you've lived in two different worlds, two different planets, really, for an extended period of time. And missionaries come back, and we deal with telling our stories, and people give us sort of that glazed over look and sort of awkward comments and things like, wow, that sounds like a cool trip, you know? It's like, it wasn't a trip, right? So it's a cool vacation, right? And missionaries deal with this because they find that people don't know how to connect. And here's a suggestion from one of our missionaries said this: if the church members take it upon themselves to learn a little on their own about the country or people among whom we live, I think it would help alleviate those members who feel self-conscious and don't know what to talk about with us, because then they would feel like they have a better grasp on what planet we're coming from. And I think that's a good suggestion. If we would take it on our own responsibility to learn a little bit about the world they've been living in. Something else, so that's that expectations. Everybody expects it should be easy, and that makes it even more difficult. Another thing I think that makes returning a challenge is the lack of preparation. Missionary individuals and families spend very little time preparing for reentry. They don't spend, it's a whirlwind of activity leading up to coming back home. There's so many things to wrap up, and it's not until you sit down on the plane and that sigh of relief, and then you start thinking about, oh, okay, so what's this actually going to look like? And so one of the ways to be proactive about that, if you're wanting to care for someone coming back from the field, is to think out ahead and be proactive, right? And contact them ahead of time and start asking them, is there ways that I can help you? And just anticipating what their needs will be. And you could also suggest, this book here is a very easy book to read. It's called Reentry by Peter Jordan. You could recommend that your returned missionary reads this book. It'll get them thinking about closure and how to start processing life when they return. So that's a book I'd recommend, Reentry by Peter Jordan. So just be aware that every person, every situation is unique. Some people adjust fairly easily back in. Others need more time. There's so many factors that will determine that, and I won't go into all of that. But basically, everyone is different, and so you just need to be sensitive to the individual's needs and what they're working through. But most likely, your missionary will struggle with some significant frustrations with home church and with home culture. They will probably experience the whole gamut of emotions, from frustration, discouragement, anxiety, anger, feelings of alienation from people around them, depression. Sometimes returned missionaries go through deep depression. And again, that arrow kind of reminds us that sometimes people, if they don't have people around them to help them process that in a healthy way, sometimes returned missionaries never fully recover from that. So it's a critical time for our returned missionaries. I just want to I don't have time to talk about this, but one group of people that often gets overlooked in the reentry are the MKs, missionary kids, and the third culture kids. And so there was a workshop earlier today, and maybe some of you were in on that. I don't have time to go into that, but this is a group of people that we should not overlook. They aren't going to talk about what they're struggling with as much. Here's a quote from an article. Person's name is Laura Allen. She says, they may look, this is MKs or third culture kids, they may look and sound like an American kid, but they think and act very differently than their American peers. They are hidden immigrants trying to navigate cultural norms that they're not accustomed to, but without the grace, patience, and help that is extended to immigrants who come to America. So they're hidden immigrants. So I just put that out there just to get you thinking that, that young people and children may not talk as much about what they're dealing with, and don't neglect them in this reentry process. We focus maybe on the parents more. And there is some sense that if mom and dad are okay, the kids are going to be able to work through it as well. But I just wanted to put that in there as a reminder. Okay, so I want to give you a reentry example from Scripture. This is from Acts chapter 14, verses 25 to 28, and Acts 15 to 35. And let me go ahead and read that. Now, this is Paul and Barnabas' first missionary journey. They're coming back to their sending church. Now, when they had preached the word in Perga, they went down to Attalia. From there, they sailed to Antioch, where they had been commended to the grace of God for the work which they had completed. Now, when they had come and gathered the church together, they reported all that God had done with them, and that he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. So they stayed there a long time with the disciples. And then this is in chapter 15. Paul and Barnabas also remained in Antioch, teaching and preaching the word of the Lord with many others also. I want to just drop 5 points from this, and I do want to give this book here, The Reentry Team by Neil Parolo. He uses this outline, so I pulled the outline from the book. And some of his ideas are in here as well. Try to give credit there. So that's it's a book on the reentry team. So they completed their assignment. In verse 26, it says, from there they sailed to Antioch, where they had been commended to the grace of God for the work which they had completed. Now, Paul and Barnabas had not done all that they could have done. There were still many, many people who needed to hear the gospel. But they believed that their work was finished and it was time for them to come back home. So when you talk about coming home, there are a lot of different reasons why people come back from the field. And some, like Paul and Barnabas, feel they believe strongly that their work is finished for now. Their part of it is finished. God has said it's time to come home. But people come back for different reasons. Sometimes it's sickness. Sometimes it's aging parents that need care. Sometimes it's visa problems or deportation. Sometimes it's discouragement and burnout. And sometimes the number one reason, team conflict, unresolved conflict that just drains the emotional energy out of you, and people end up coming back discouraged. So a lot of different reasons why people come back. And so, of course, we need to be sensitive to that as we're caring for these people. But missionaries will be coming home, who are coming home, will all have one thing in common. That just like Paul and Barnabas, they will have left a lot of work undone. There are still many needs unmet, still many people who need to hear the gospel, still new believers that need to be discipled. And they're going to struggle with that to some extent, the work that they left undone. When I sit down with, and I sat down with a lot of missionaries debriefing, and I usually just do one-on-one with a couple or the family or an individual. And we always talk about this, the reasons for coming back. And I ask them, do you think this is where God wants you to be right now? And they process that and they say, yes, you know, it's hard. There's all the what ifs, if it had gone differently. But every returned missionary that I've sat down with up to this point has said, you know, when it's in the end, I believe this is where God wants me to be. And that's really important. They need to work through that and put that into words. And they may need your help in doing that, because that's a really important part of bringing closure. So part of the debriefing is just talking about this. And sometimes it's just a matter of processing it by verbalizing that. Yes, there's a lot of things that were left undone and things unresolved, but I believe this is where God wants me to be right now. That's a really important part of closure. So I'll talk a little bit more about the debriefing a little bit later, and that's when I sit down with people, we'll talk. That's one of the things we talk about. And there's some questions there in the handout that I gave you on that. So moving along to the second point here is that they returned to their sending church. From there they sailed to Antioch, where they had been commended to the grace of God for the work which they had completed. Neil Parolo, in his book, Their Reentry, reminds us that these stories are written for a reason, right? There's something to learn from these stories. And now your mission organization may provide reentry debriefing, and that's great. But your missionaries are going to need longer-term support and care than what your organization can provide. And that needs to be done by the home church and people that are close to the individual or family. It's a well-known fact that returned missionaries often struggle to find their place in their home church. It's part of the reason, as we talked about, is they have changed. Your returned missionary has come back with a very different perspective on a lot of things. And one of those things, if you live in a third world country especially, is just your view of money and wealth and material possessions and the big houses, right? And the high standard of living is going to bother them. They're going to struggle with that. So they've changed, but they've come back to a home church that's changed also. People have moved away. New people are attending. Maybe a new pastor. Maybe there's been a church split while they're gone. And that's really difficult, coming back to that. Missionaries come back kind of subconsciously expecting to slip back into that same spot that they had before. But that spot that they used to occupy isn't there anymore because it's been filled in with other people. Somebody else is teaching the Sunday school class. So where do I fit? Relationships are different. Friends have gotten married. People have moved away. Life has gone on without them. And it's a really crucial time for returned missionaries. And returned missionaries, and this is just, it just is, will tend to become critical. They will see everything that's wrong with the home church. And I try to tell them, don't do that, right? But it's going to happen. They see it. There's the things that are wrong, the things that need to be changed, and they tend to become critical. And when people don't know how to respond to that, they feel that. And then there's this alienation that happens. And the statistics are not great. And this is really burdens me. This is a burden. You talked about a burden, Rick, the other day. This is a burden I have, that way too many missionaries come back to their home churches and they end up disillusioned and they just move on somewhere else. And we need to do better. We need to do better. They deserve better. The church deserves better. God deserves better. So I'm not saying it's always going to be roses when missionaries come back, but they're going to need help in finding that place again. So it's going to be hard. It's a fact, and it's going to take them time. But the thing that is going to help them more than anything else is sensitive, carrying people around them who take the initiative to reach out, take the time to listen and hear from them. So I'm going to come back to that, the listening part, because that's a big part of it. The struggle to find the fit again. They returned, they received the church's hospitality. It says they stayed there a long time. Likely Paul and Barnabas lived right in the homes. That's the way it would have probably been done. Traveling missionaries, itinerant preachers, they would have stayed in the homes. I'm not saying that's the best thing, but what I'm pointing out is the church in Antioch took it on themselves. They saw it as their responsibility to provide for the physical needs of the returned missionary. And so I just want to highlight that here. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this part of the logistical needs. It's huge. It's not something that I've spent a lot of time. I'm more on the caring side. There are people here in this room who really do well at providing logistical support. It's something that's really needed, and I just want to say a couple things about it. Planning for logistical reentry support needs to start months in advance, so be proactive. Don't wait till the last minute. And don't assume anything. I was debriefing with a returned missionary, and they said they came back. It was actually on home assignment. And they showed up in church, and people were like, we didn't know you were back. And it turned out they didn't know, and they had family, but the rest of the people assumed the family was kind of taken care of logistically, and they didn't have things prepared. And it doesn't feel that you're, welcoming to come back to people. Say, oh, wow, it's great to know. I didn't know you were back. So this planning for logistical needs needs to happen, needs to start, you know, months in advance. Be proactive in whatever way you can. Maybe here, you know, one thing you can do if you're in a position to make this happen, announcing the date of the return, for the, you know, return date of the missionary in Sunday morning in church more than once, so people are aware of it. And then along with that, maybe someone in the church could publish a list of needs, practical ways. Here's the things that are needed, practical ways that you can help as a congregation, and get that out there months in advance so people can start thinking about that. Maybe you're not on the leadership team. Maybe you can't make it happen. But, you know, pastors are busy, and they don't think about these things. So check. Maybe check with the missionary and ask them, you know, email, say, you know, logistically, how are your needs being met? What can I do? And maybe nudge the pastor a bit and talk about it. One D&I missionary on furlough said, most people don't realize what it is like, and I understand why they don't, to come home and you don't have a home of your own, a car to drive, or food. It is a real blessing when a church wants to help prepare a place so when you come home you feel wanted instead of like a burden into people's busy lives. So this is something that's really important in the reentry. I have a sheet. One of the handouts there is just some suggestions for reentry support. I'm not going to go over it. You can read over that. A lot of good stuff in there. Joel Yoder had put some stuff together, and we worked at it. Another book that's really good is this Neil Parola's book called Serving as Senders. And this is not just about return missionaries. This is about how to care for missionaries from the time they leave, while they're on the field, and coming back. But chapter 7 in this book deals specifically with reentry. So I would recommend this. If you're a pastor, you need to read this book. And anyone who cares about missionaries, you know, should be reading this book. Highly recommend. You've read it? Yes. So I'm just one disclaimer I'll say about this book. He's very idealistic and a little bit unrealistic. Like I read the book and I was like, there's no way that you're going to do all that stuff. But it's okay. You know, just start small. Start implementing some of his suggestions, and you know, maybe someday you'll do everything he says. I doubt it. It's, you know, the standard's pretty high, but it's a really great resource. Yes?
We're going to talk about the role of support groups for missionaries.
I was not going to talk about that. That's, you're talking about while they're on the field.
Well, also, we don't have much experience, but
okay.
ABT has been helping us. So we just sent a family to Indonesia, and I think hopefully it'll work out, but then you have someone designated,
yes,
in place,
yes,
to hopefully help those people that feels responsible to make that some of these needs are
right.
met.
So what he's saying in this book, that you need to have people designated that have volunteered and said, yes, we'll be part of the support team for reentry. But there's all there's
over,
but there's the whole, yeah,
it's
from beginning to end.
Yes, for praying, for financial, for
exactly
logistics, and then coming back again,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, that someone feels directly,
yes,
responsible, which I think sounds like a good idea, hopefully.
Yes, and there's a lot of churches that are implementing it, and this book has been helpful in that. So what you're talking about is basically some ideas. This book is talking about, this is not my topic necessarily about the support groups or support teams, but it needs to happen. And I absolutely. So this book will give you a lot of ideas. And the one part of that then is the reentry team, the reentry support team. Thank you. It's called Serving as Senders Today is the updated one. Serving as Senders Today. Let's see. And chapter 7 deals specifically with the reentry team. Yeah. Okay. So don't wait until your missionary comes back to start thinking about it. So need to be proactive months in advance preparing for this. They rehearsed all that God had done. Now when they had gathered together, the church together, they reported all that God had done with them and that he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. It's interesting. So Paul and Barnabas had traveled from Salamis to Paphos, Perga to Antioch and Pisidia, Iconium, Lystra, Derbe. And in that journey, they had so many experiences. One day they were being worshipped as gods. You know, the next day they're stoned and thrown out of the city. And it says that they gathered the church together and rehearsed all that God had done. So it must have been more than a 10-minute presentation. That was a lot of stories to tell. That's important. I'm going to say this is debriefing, rehearsing all that God has done. And there's a couple different ways that this needs to happen. And one way is that sort of presentation, public presentation, where you share with the church. And there's a number of reasons why it's important. Number one, the people in the church need to hear it. And just like Paul and Barnabas, they had some people in their home church who were a little skeptical, right, about this mission to the unreached. And they needed to hear what God was doing. And God used that to inspire a vision in the home church. But it is also, I think, this rehearsing all that God had done was important for Paul and Barnabas as well. It's an important part of processing the experience and putting it into perspective, putting into context what God has been doing in your life. So the church needs to hear it, but the returned missionary needs that opportunity. So there's that public presentation, the standing in front of the church to rehearse all that God has done. Give them more than 10 minutes. You know, they need adequate time. And I would suggest more than once, not just once with the whole church, but there's opportunities to share in Sunday school classes with the youth group and many other opportunities. And this gives a returned missionary multiple opportunities to rehearse all that God has done and to process. That's an important part of it. So I just want to encourage you, if you have any, you know, influence in making this happen, make sure that your missionaries have opportunity to do this. And for young ladies, single ladies who, you know, wouldn't want to stand up in front of the church, I mean, there's Sunday school classes, there's plenty of other opportunities. So help to arrange for that. They might be shy about asking. So ask them. Now, the second is personal debriefing. And this is the part that I have spent the most time doing and I feel the most passionate about. There needs to be, and this can be done, like at D&I, we provide, they come to New York or wherever we meet with them, we sit down, it's an arranged time. But this can also be done informally, over a cup of coffee, over a meal, in your living room. One time, some friends of ours came to New York to visit us, and they had been on the field for, you know, about 9 years. And they came back and had been home for about 3 years. And they had never had any debriefing. And they had been through some really hard things. And we were sitting in the living room and started asking questions. And they talked for hours. And after I don't know how many hours went by, they said, "Oh, we just had our debriefing." And I learned something really important about debriefing. That, number one, it's a lot about listening. And I didn't really think I was doing anything. I was just listening to interesting stories and asking questions. Like, wow, that's, you know, tell me more. And for me, it was just listening to interesting stories. But for them, it was significant that someone that cared about them actually took the time to listen, to hear the stories. And that's really what debriefing is. It needs to happen. The experience helped me to learn something very important about debriefing, and it is this people have a lot to say if you take the time to listen. There's something very healing about being able to be real with someone who cares and takes the time to listen. Listening is a loving act. I could spend a lot of time going over checklists of things you could do, but if you take one thing away, this is what I'd want you to take away. The people aren't projects or checklists. They're needs of the heart that need attention. And what your returned missionary needs more than anything is someone who will take the time to listen. And that's not always easy to find. William Stringfellow said, "Listening is a rare happening among human beings." Do you think that's true?
Yeah, it is.
Yes. It is true. Sadly, it's true. It's not always easy to find someone who really would take the time to let you tell the story. Sometimes it takes hours. And so I just, if there's anything you take away, it would be this. So I wanted to share some tips for debriefing. So when I do debriefing, you know, we sit down, and I take, for couples, I prefer doing like 2 days, and I did hours of time. In your handout, I have, there's a sheet that says, "Where in the world am I?" and then "Peaks and Valleys." And I work through that. And the first page where it says, "Where in the world am I?" I might get down through question, like the third question, like the first two sections. And, I mean, half the day has gone by. We haven't talked about more than two things. That's been a really helpful little sheet for me. You know, I don't know if you're just doing sort of informal with a friend. You could still use it. I think it, so I just share that as a resource for you. So here's some tips for debriefing. First of all, extend the invitation. And I just mean letting the person know that you are available and that you care. Now, this kind of caring relationship should happen just spontaneously within the body of Christ. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen as often as it should. Because we tend to stay in our assigned roles. So the way that you relate to your pastor is different than the way you relate to your fellow church member or the guy that you work with. And people tend to get uncomfortable when they're asked to move out of that role. It gets a little awkward. And the truth is that many of us have been raised to avoid making other people feel uncomfortable, which means that you don't talk about your problems and that you smile and you shake hands and, you know, talk about comfortable things and don't get too deep because it gets uncomfortable. And somehow we have to get past that. And the other thing is you're returning. So we kind of have this hang up anyhow. I think about dealing with this stuff, and we don't want to talk about uncomfortable topics. The other thing is that your return missionary may not actually understand his own feelings, and he's not even sure if it's okay to struggle because he's supposed to be playing the role of someone very spiritual. He's the missionary after all, so he may be not sure if it's okay to actually feel the way that he's feeling. And so I just want to share that to keep that in mind, and don't be afraid to initiate, extend the invitation, and let the person know that you're available. And one way is just to say, you know, hey, John, I know that readjusting to life here in the U.S. can be a challenge for families. How are you doing? If you'd like to talk about it, I'm available. I'd love to talk with you. Or the way I would probably do it, if my preferred way is say, hey, I'd love to go out for a cup of coffee and hear about your time, you know, overseas. And then after you've listened, after it's natural to say, hey, you know, I know that you know, the adjustments, the transition back home can be hard. How's it going? How are you and the kids doing? I mean, that's the kind of thing that should just be happening. You know, you don't have to, the pastor doesn't have to do it. The pastor should be, but people in the congregation just taking the initiative. Hey, let's go out for a cup of coffee. And in that context, you enter into a caring relationship where you can help that person process. So here's, I just want to give you some tips for debriefing. First of all, extend the invitation. Second, listen, be swift to hear, slow to speak. So I used to get nervous when people would ask me and say, I need some advice. I have a question for you. And I would say, oh, no. I'm going to not have the right answer. But rule number one, what I have learned over the years is don't answer their question. Wait. Ask questions. Respond by asking questions. And so you ask, well, why wait? And I'll tell you why I wait. Is I found that whatever the challenge, struggle, question they have, that often in the process of me asking questions and listening and giving the person the space to put their feelings into words, they end up answering their own question, right? And by the end of it, their question about what should I do next, well, it actually becomes kind of obvious. And so I'd much rather help them do that than me to have the answer up front. So I wait. I don't respond. I never answer that question. When someone says, I have a question, I need some advice, I never answer that until I've listened. So there is a time to answer. Okay, so first, listen. Second, listen. Here's an interesting quote from this book. I'm going to recommend this book, Christians and the Art of Caring. It's not about debriefing, but it's about caring for people in the context of the body of Christ. Christians and the Art of Caring by William Arnold and Margaret Full. And they have, this is a quote. Too many people assume that communication means sending a message. So they spend a great deal of time and energy finding just the right words and just the right vehicle for delivering their message effectively. But ironically, it turns out that our message of care is best delivered by receiving words from the other person. You understand what he's saying? So in other words, we need to listen. So we need to wait. We need to slow down, be slow to speak. When we answer quickly, too often we end up assuming things. and our response, however true it may be, doesn't hit the target. And what happens is the person doesn't feel heard. You weren't really listening because your response didn't hit the target, and then they tend to shut down. And it's subtle, but people shut down when they aren't feeling heard. So you have to draw it out of them. So it's just one of the things I've learned. If you listen well enough and long enough, you will hear the words from the other person that they need to hear from you. And when you communicate your advice, your encouragement, and your counsel to someone using that person's own words, it communicates something very powerful. It's you're saying, I'm listening and I care, and people will want to hear from you. And you have an amazing opportunity to speak into people's lives. So the next step, there you go, listen again, right? So listen, listen, listen. You know, if you can't sit down for hours on end and listen and listen and care, you know, you're going to have a hard time with 10 minutes, thank you, with this. But it's something that is a skill that you can develop. So I just want to encourage you. Here's a couple things to listen for words. Listen for the choice of words. People start shifting their language and they get a little uncomfortable. So pay attention to that. Listen for feelings. Learn to listen for the feelings beneath the words. Watch for what is said. Looking for body language. There's so much that we could talk about this. The tone of voice and the emotions. The body language, facial expressions, eye contact or lack of it. These, when as you listen to the words, as you listen beneath the words, you look at, you watch the body language. The choice of words, the emotions, and the body language are clues as to what's going on beneath the surface. And it's like ships and icebergs. It's the stuff beneath the surface that sinks the missionary. And what your job is, as you're sitting down talking with someone and caring for them, is to help them bring that stuff to the surface and help them put words to it. And that sounds, you say, well, yeah, of course. I just want to tell you, don't underestimate how valuable that is, how significant that is. That process will do more than you can ever imagine. And so then, as you're listening, respond with care. Invite the person with your words and your body language to explore the things beneath the surface. And when you notice the tear that runs down, acknowledge that. And you can say, I noticed the tear that came down there. Did you want to talk? Would you like to talk about that? One of the things that I often do when I'm debriefing or sitting with someone and I notice that someone gets emotional or a tear runs down, I often don't say anything, but I just have this habit, sort of, I've trained myself just to lean forward in my chair and let the person know it's a safe place. It's okay. You can share. You know, I'm not going to push them, but it's the invitation to share. So your body language says a lot. And sometimes some people get uncomfortable and there's too much emotion. What am I going to do with this? You don't have to fix it. They just need someone to listen and to allow them to explore this stuff beneath the surface. It's tremendously healing. As someone has said, the needs of the heart are healed as they pass over lips and pencil tips. So invite, reflect back. And I'm going to this is just reflecting back to the person what you're hearing. You're saying, what I'm hearing you say. And you're checking for understanding. You're helping them maybe to kind of giving them a mirror to see what they've been, to see what's in their heart. So reflecting back. Duane Elmer said, listening may be one of the most effective expressions of love. For this reason, it honors the person speaking. So the reason I'm spending so much time on this part of listening is that it's really, really important. And often all the missionary needs in order to make sense out of their experience on the field and to transition well is to sit down with a caring person who listens well. And honestly, that's about all I do in debriefings. I just do a lot of listening. And then after I've listened, then I'll respond. So there is that time. I'm not saying there's not a time for counsel to speak in. There's a time to provide that counsel. There's the encouragement that comes. God brings comfort through us as we speak back to the person. So there's a time for that. But it happens after we've listened well. And the one thing that I've noticed is that one of the very powerful things is that after you've listened, to bring that person to the Lord Jesus in prayer, inviting them to pray, but also praying for them. And there's something that's really powerful. But when you've listened and you start putting into words what they're feeling. And they hear you doing that. It's a powerful ministry. But you have to listen to be able to do that. So they minister again in their home church. How much time do we have? We 5 minutes?
5 or 6 minutes.
5 or 6 minutes, okay. So they minister again in their home church. They integrate it into their home church. Some people need more time for this, and some it takes less. But for all returned missionaries, there needs to be a period of grieving the losses. And you may not understand that, but the returned missionary is losing something they can never get back. And one of those things they're losing they can never get back is relationships. There are some people they'll never see again. And some of the people, of course, they'll see in heaven, right? But there also are some people that they're not sure if they will ever see again, ever. And that is a deep grief, a deep loss. And so when the missionary is coming back, they're dealing with deep losses that need to be grieved. And they need the space, they need people to invite them to do that and give them the space to do it. In my experience, if a missionary does not take time or is not given the time to properly grieve, they end up, like, for example, kind of short-circuited by coming home and getting married right away or jumping right back into the job. What I found ends up happening is sometime later, they're going to have to go through that grieving process of grieving those losses. So I'm just saying, encourage and provide the opportunity for that grieving to happen. And, you know, a lot of times what I end up doing is telling people, you know, I listen and then I say, you know what, it's okay. You're not going crazy. This is a normal, it's hard, but this is a normal part of the transition process. You're going to be okay. You're going to make it through with this. And that's a lot of what I do. I listen and then I reassure them that they're not crazy and they're going to be okay. So it's actually quite simple, and it's also very rewarding. But your goal then is to get your missionary integrated back into the life of the church. And there's so much to say here, but sometimes it's hard to know. So there's that grieving period, but the reinvesting. This is a hard one for a lot of returned missionaries. They come back having learned so much, and they have so much to offer, but they can't figure out how to translate that and reinvest it. And it's going to take a lot of humility on the part of everyone, because your returned missionary needs to be humble about everything he knows, but you also need to be humble. When he says, you know, everybody seems like they're so caught up in their jobs and don't have a vision for missions, and we sort of push back on that and say, maybe we need to be humble enough to receive that. Maybe they're right. And so there's that give and take, but the returned missionaries have learned so much that needs to be reinvested, and they need to figure out how to reinvest that in the home church and home community. And some of that just needs to happen by, you don't have to have the answers. It's not like you've got to have the answers. But some of it, again, is just through talking through it, processing it, asking questions, and figuring out how I can reinvest what I learned here on the field here in my home church and my home community. So basically, I've said two things. Missionaries need care on two levels. First, they need people who will take the initiative to provide logistical support, help them figure out housing and transportation, who take the initiative to make that happen so they don't have to come begging. So they need that logistical support. And they also need caring people who will sit down and listen and help them rehearse all that God has done and that as they transition back. Sadly, listening is a rare occurrence, but the good news is it's a skill that you can learn. Listening is a loving act and is probably the greatest gift you can give to your return missionary. So I just want to leave you with that. Are we out of time now?
About 2 minutes.
2 minutes. So does anyone have any response or questions in this 2 minutes? Yes.
You do a lot of degrees from your
yes.
missionaries outside of your own congregation, is that correct?
I do some. We, and I just want to say this, the D&I, we are working on developing the reentry piece. Mark Slayball is here, and we're actually have a meeting tomorrow morning, and we're working at developing a sort of weekend, extended weekend, that could be group debriefings that will be open to people from other mission organizations. We'll be able to provide care for more than just D&I workers. We have done some up to this point, but limited.
I was just wondering, do you lay a foundation for the pastor then after you debrief them?
It's terrible. I have done horrible on that. It needs to happen, and that's one of the things that we've been talking about is working with home churches. You're right, and Yeah, so you hit on something I have not done well on. Yes.
I reckon we could practice this when they're home on furlough, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a lot of the same things. I do the re-entry debriefing and the furlough debriefings are very similar.
So what do we do with families that were called home by the sending church who were dysfunctional or had moral failure?
Oh, boy.
I need a 45-minute subject on that. Please do that. Thank you.
In 10 seconds.
No, in 2 years.
In 2 years. 45 minutes. In 2 years, do it. Yeah.
I mean, it happens, you know. Yeah. There are families that get called back.
Yeah. Yeah. So... so it's something that this is a, something that we're, Dee and I, we see this as something that has been neglected. We have tried to provide this, but we see that more needs to be done. And one of the things you hit on is partnering with the home churches and the pastors and helping them, because there's care that needs to happen that we can't do in the 2-day debriefing. So thank you for asking that question. Okay, our time's up. I'll turn it back to the moderator.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.